This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca, in for Ira Flatto. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about dinosaurs, and after that, a discussion of the function of sleep. But first, there's a small rodent-like mammal called a selenodon that lives on two islands in the Caribbean, Cuba and Hispaniola. Though it's endangered now as a species, it's been on this planet a really, really long time. My first guest and his colleagues have used DNA to trace its evolutionary history, and by their calculations, the first selenodon showed up about 76 million years ago, a time when dinosaurs still roamed the Earth. Their new research appears in this week's issue of the journal Nature. If you'd like to talk about the selenodon and maybe learn some tricks about how to make it through a mass extinction, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. If you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website at www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. Now let me introduce my guest. Al Rocha is a senior scientist in the Laboratory of Genomic Diversity at Science Applications International Corporation with the National Cancer Institute in Frederick, Maryland. He joins me today from his office there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Rocha.
Hello, Joe. Good to be here.
So first, I guess we have to, you know, for those of us who aren't intimately familiar with selenodons, can you tell me what they are and what they look like?
Well, as you said, they look a little bit like a large rodent. But if you saw one, it wouldn't quite look like a rodent. It's got an extremely long snout. It looks like someone sort of grabbed the front of the snout and stretched it. And then the other thing you would notice are the extremely large claws. In fact, when I first saw the claws pictured in monographs that first described the selenodons, I thought they must be exaggerated. But I've seen museum samples, and they have these sort of large Freddy Krueger-like almost claws.
And what do they use these for?
Well, they use them for a couple of things. One is they tear into rotten logs. They like to eat the grubs and the large invertebrates and small vertebrates that they get there. And they use them to dig underground as well. They have these extensive tunnel networks that they live in, a foot or more under the ground, and they will actually claw their way through and look for the food they like to eat. The other interesting thing is that their venom, they produce venom in their saliva, which is very rare for a small furry mammal. And people who have kept them, they used to be kept in zoos decades ago, who have been bitten by selenodons, got a rather nasty bite because of the venom. They've also been noted to have sort of a crude, sort of screechy, make these screechy sounds. And some people think that it's sort of a crude form of echolocation, like a bat has. So it buries around these tunnels with a little bit of echolocation to find the food that it likes to eat.
I'm just trying to picture this. This is a 2-pound rodent with long claws, a venomous bite, and a screechy call. Sounds like the perfect pet.
Well, I don't know about the perfect pet, but it's actually quite highly endangered, and very few of them are ever found. So it's a good thing that people aren't using them for pets. Also, it's not really a rodent. It's more of an insectivore. It's more like a shrew.
I got it. But now that brings me to the question, okay, so you're working at the National Cancer, or with the National Cancer Institute in Frederick, Maryland.
Right.
Why does a cancer institute researcher get interested in a selenodon?
Well, as you might imagine, cancer and a lot of other diseases, one of the causes are breaks in the chromosome. So you see a lot of deletions, translocations, et cetera, in cancer, in other diseases. One of the best way to understand these sort of chromosomal rearrangements is to compare the chromosomes across a broad range of species. So if you were to look at a tiger and an elephant and a cat and a human, you'd be able to see that they share a lot of the same genes, but their chromosomes are completely rearranged. And by looking at those rearrangements, you can get an idea of the mechanisms involved in the same sorts of chromosome breaks in cancer and other diseases. In order to be able to do that, though, you need to understand how all these different animals are related. And because they're morphologically so different, it was very hard on morphological grounds to come up with a complete phylogeny. So what some of my collaborators, notably Murphy, Isaric, Springer, and O'Brien did, they came up with about 10 to 20,000 base pair of DNA sequence from multiple genes for all these different animals to come up with a very good phylogeny. And when I saw it, I said, wait a minute, there's one animal that's missing here, and that's the selenodon. And
oh, I see. So this is sort of like filling in the gap and understanding that picture of how these this DNA is changing over time and cross species.
Exactly. The more the more diverse the set of animals that you look at, the better understanding you can get of how they're related. And people who find genes for diseases will want to figure out what parts of those genes are involved in, are the important parts of the gene that are involved in protein function. And you can spend a lot of money trying to figure that out, or what you can actually do is compare the genes across a broad range of mammals. And almost always what you will get is that the really important parts of the genes are preserved across all the different mammals. So by comparing the sequence in things like elephants or tigers or anything else, you can actually find the parts of the genes that are of interest.
We're talking about a strange animal called the selenodon, which may have something to tell us about cancer, but in this case tells us something about the evolutionary history of animals in the Caribbean. And you're welcome to join our conversation by calling 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. So tell us a little bit about how you figured out that these selenodons have been around for so long.
What my colleague said was, good luck finding a selenodon, because they're not found in zoos. So what I did is I was born, the selenodons, as you said, are found in Hispaniola and eastern Cuba. And I was born in eastern Cuba. My family left when I was about 6 years old. And I called up one of my smarter uncles, and I said, have you ever heard of an almiqui, which is the Cuban word for selenodon?
Almiqui?
Almiqui. That's what it's called in Cuba.
Okay.
And he had actually heard of one. And I asked him, well, have you ever eaten one? And he had been a political prisoner in Cuba for 2 years, and he was forced to cut sugarcane. And he had told me that there was another native mammal in Cuba called a jutia, which is what they fed on when they were there. And that really is a big Cuban rodent. But he had never eaten an almiqui, and I explained to him why we were looking for one. And 2 days later, his name is Humberto Otero, his business partner, Demetrio Castillo, faxed me the phone number for the veterinarian at the zoo in Santo Domingo. So I called him up, spoke to him in Spanish. He knew what a selenodon was. His name is Roberto Maria. And he said, today's your lucky day, because a campesino, a peasant in the northern mountain regions of the Dominican Republic, had caught a bunch of them, and one had survived, and it was at the zoo. And he sent me a small blood sample.
Right. And so from the blood sample, you began looking at the DNA and working backwards, as it were, using sort of, I guess, their molecular tools that allow you to figure out what kind of changes took place over what kind of time?
Exactly. We already had the previously existing mammalian DNA sequences, so it was very easy to amplify the same genes. And there's a mathematics called Bayesianism, which was actually developed hundreds of years ago, and it's only in the last 3 to 5 years that it's been applied to DNA sequences. What that allows you to do is get some very well-resolved fossil dates. Okay, so you've got all these mammals on the tree. You know the fossil dates are very good for some of them and not so good for the others. Well, you take the good ones, plug them into the tree, and then what the program does is it figures out what all the other dates should be on the tree.
Hmm.
And that's how we came up with a date of 76 million years for the selenodon. And I called my uncle up and I said, hey, you know, there's a chance this thing has been on Cuba for 76 million years.
Huh.
And he said, that's longer than Fidel.
I guess we're talking about Fidel Castro in this case,
yes,
or
exactly.
not your uncle Fidel.
No, exactly. No.
Okay. And one, I gather then that there's actually two different, slightly different strains of these selenodons, one that you find in Cuba and one that you find in Hispaniola that diverged some time ago.
Yes, exactly. There's two species, and the geological history of the Caribbean actually begins roughly where Panama is today, between North and South America. When North and South America separated, the Proto-Antilles that eventually became the islands formed there, and they, over geological time, they moved northeastward to their current position. And as they did this, they sort of crashed into Mexico. They formed a land connection with Mexico. And one of the reasons geologists think that happened is because some of the dinosaurs in South America look a lot like the dinosaurs in North America after a certain time in the Mesozoic. That actually happened between 70 and 80 million years ago, which fits exactly with the date that we've estimated. And thus, we think it's quite possible that the selenodon may have entered the islands at that point in time.
Interesting. Well, let's invite our callers to join the conversation. I'm going to go to Nick in Maryland. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Glad to get through.
What's your question? Go ahead. Sorry.
Doctor, this animal, the Salina dog, has been around for 76 million years, I think you said?
Exactly.
Now, what sort of evolutionary changes has it undergone from, I guess, the original ancestor that would allow it to remain alive for such a long period of time?
That's an excellent question. We think selenodons are so primitive. They retain a lot of the primitive traits of early mammals. And so we think it probably hasn't undergone a lot of changes. And in fact, I had mentioned that the Caribbean islands have moved northeastward, while eastern Cuba and the northern part of Hispaniola were actually one island until about 25 million years ago. And the sort of the other surprising date we came up with was we compared the two species, the Cuban and the Hispaniola, and they turned out to be about 25 million years apart, which is way more than anybody had expected. And it's consistent with them being a single species on the combined island. And then as the island separated, they became the two species. It also possibly suggests, since they have such primitive features, that perhaps when early mammals were evolving, there's always been a debate about, well, the DNA people will tell you they all evolved about 30 million years before the death of the dinosaurs. And the people who study morphology say, no, you see all the morphological changes after the dinosaurs.
Now, I just should explain, morphology is just describing how the animal looks, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's the sort of the shape of the teeth and the bend of the arm and that kind of thing.
Exactly. It's largely based on teeth. And what we're finding is that these two species of selenodon are actually much further apart than anyone anticipated. And therefore, it may be possible, you know, we can't say for sure, that some of these early mammals may have been more different than is suggested by the morphology.
Interesting. Nick, thanks for the call. I have, I'd like to go to caller number six. I think that's right. Or five, perhaps, is the one I'm looking for. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hello?
Who's this?
Yes, I'm calling about the selenodon.
Yes. What's your name and what's your question?
My question is, do they exist on Jamaica, or is it possible they live there and they haven't been found yet?
Interesting. Jamaica.
No, I think what happened in the case of Jamaica is that for part of its geological past, Jamaica was underwater, so it was completely submerged. So anything that had survived there from the age of the dinosaurs would have died out. The other interesting thing about the selenodons is if they were on the island at the age of dinosaurs, the asteroid that killed off the dinosaurs landed in the Caribbean itself 65 million years ago. And the effects would have been catastrophic, needless to say. There were 200-meter tall tidal waves. I mean, if you've seen the promos for The Day After Tomorrow, that movie, you see the waves reaching up to the Statue of Liberty. Well, the mega tsunamis generated by the asteroids that were hurled onto the islands were 200 meters tall.
Wow.
There were all sorts of climate changes. The vegetation died out worldwide. There were hypercanes with winds unimaginable, much higher. They're called hypercanes because they're much...
So how do you survive that? I'm sorry, we're almost out of time, but how do you survive all that?
You survive that by basically living underground and eating things that live on dead vegetation. And we suspect that that's how the selenodon survived so close to the asteroid when it hit the Earth.
Okay. Well, Al Roca, I'm afraid that's all the time we've got. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thanks also to Bargal, Helgen, and Maria, who I haven't mentioned, and thank you.
Okay,
yeah.
You're welcome. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For being here. Al Roca is a senior scientist in the Laboratory of Genomic Diversity at Science Applications International Corporation with the National Cancer Institute in Frederick, Maryland. Thanks very much for talking with us. We'll be right back after a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News, and I'm Joe Palca. We were supposed to be talking to Paul Sereno right now about dinosaurs, and we're hoping to get him on the line. But having said goodbye to Al Roca, I'm happy to welcome him back to the program. He's agreed to stay on the line and fill in as our expert for a few minutes while we try to get connected to Paul Sereno. So thanks for staying with us. And if you want to ask Al Roca a question, our number here is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. So they live through these selenodons, these animals that you're studying. They made it through the dinosaurs. They made it through this catastrophic event 65 million years ago. What are they? What's their status today?
Well, both species are highly endangered, and in fact, many times during the past century, the Cuban selenodon has been considered to be completely extinct. However, about once a decade or so, someone will catch it and will catch a specimen. They're endangered because when Europeans landed in the Americas, they brought with them dogs and cats and mongooses, all of which apparently like to eat selenodons. And they also brought with them inadvertently rats and mice, and the rats and mice are competitors to the selenodons. In fact, we had to get our sample of a Cuban selenodon from a museum. They were initially discovered by Felipe Boé, who is sort of the John James Audubon of Cuba. He's the most famous naturalist who named a lot of the species and the first to find the selenodon in Cuba. And he had collected some in the 1850s, and they had sat in these museums for 150 years in alcohol. And he became sort of our posthumous collaborator, and in fact, we dedicate the paper to him.
I noticed that. I've never seen a dedication to a paper to someone who is like 100 years old or 100 years departed.
Well, we put in the dedication, and the Nature author says, no, you can't do that. They have to have had some kind of role in your study. And I said, well, wait a minute. He may be dead since 1891, but he got us the samples. And we luckily had Dr. Bargal, who is an expert on ancient DNA, and you have to do this in a separate a room from all the other DNA so you don't contaminate them. And she managed to extract three of the samples, and that's the way we were able to sort of compare the Cuban and the Hispaniolan selenodons.
Actually, on that point, I mean, you're looking at DNA, right?
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about how you're able, from a museum sample, to still look at DNA and make reasonable? I would have thought that staying in a jar for 100 years would cause DNA to start to break down.
Well, it does degrade to a certain extent, and normal DNA you can sort of amplify thousands of base pair. For the Hispaniola selenodon, the one we got from the Dominican Republic, we were able to amplify more than 10,000 base pair of DNA. For the Cuban one, the DNA does degrade, but it degrades only to a certain extent. And they have gotten DNA from samples, up to tens of thousands, or in some cases, plants hundreds of thousands of years old. No one, by the way, has ever gotten DNA from a dinosaur.
Because there are no library, no museum samples that have survived that long, or they're looking at fossilized material that would have degraded totally.
Because the DNA, because the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, the DNA is completely degraded. But selenodons, and alcohol is actually a very good preservative, because the things that help with ancient DNA are lack of oxygen, and if you keep it dry, and you might not think of alcohol as dry, but it does dehydrate the DNA. It takes the water molecules away. And we had to sort of amplify it in little tiny segments. So we amplified about 2,500 base pair of DNA, but it was maybe 100 base pair at a time.
I see. Is there anything being done? I mean, you said these animals are endangered. Oh, and there was one point you made in your article that I meant to ask you about. So you said that they were one of the few remaining non-flying mammals that survived the human settlements in the Caribbean.
Right.
And I was trying to think, besides bats, if I'm missing something on the number of non-flying mammals. Are there others besides?
No. Okay. That's just an easy way of saying bats, because things fly to the islands. Bats and birds fly to the islands. And people have looked at lineages in the Caribbean, which is kind of what we did with the selenodon. There's about 500 or 600 lineages of amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals on the Caribbean. Once a lineage lands there, it can speciate. But what people have done is compared those lineages in the Caribbean to the ones that are on the mainland, and in every single case, their nearest mainland ancestor got there during the age of mammals. All right, the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, and then after that, we named the age of mammals because we're mammals and we sort of think we're important.
I'm familiar with that syndrome.
And so all of these other species apparently got there, fairly recently compared to the selenodon. There may be one frog and there may be one amphibian, that may have got there around the same time as the Selenodon. There used to be about 8 lineages of mammals in Cuba. There used to be ground sloths, and there used to be primates such as monkeys. And when the Paleo-Indians first arrived in Cuba about 7,000 years ago, they were, I suppose, quite hungry. And the easier prey, the larger prey, apparently went extinct around the time the Paleo-Indians landed there.
Well, Al Roca, thank you so much for sticking around and broadening and deepening our knowledge of the Selenodon. While we will be respectful if we ever get to see one and not touch it or pick it up, it might be an interesting thing to see someday.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
And thanks again. Al Roca is a senior scientist at the Laboratory of Genomic Diversity at Science Applications International Corporation, and he's with the National Cancer Institute also, or his offices are at the National Cancer Institute in Frederick.